B-Pod Studios.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
Deuce Daly.
Yeah, I'm hiring Deuce also. But you can have both. You can have innovation and experience like Mike Shanahan, who's helping his son up in the booth over there in San Francisco.
Right.
And what did he tell him to do? Run the ball. I know we got this nice quarterback over here, but continue to run the daggone ball. But real quick, on the other issue of coaching is, Trey was mentioning about all the things that Andy Reid done earlier in his career. Listen, people want coaching. They want leadership.
Mm-hmm.
They want to know what they want discipline. A lot of people want to coddle people early on. Like, if a lot of these, if say Brett Brown would have got on these guys earlier in their career, a lot of these issues would be passed already. They'll be past the majority of these issues already, but people think that players don't want discipline. You do, even if the players say, I don't want it, but deep down, you know you need it. You know you want it because you need and want to go in a specific direction. And if you believe that guy can get you there, you want that. So, I mean, does that make sense? Am I making sense here?
Well, I have one question for you. You said if Brett Brown got these guys younger, I mean, he's had all these guys younger.
No, what I mean is he got at them. I'm trying to talk fast because I know I got a limited amount of time. If he got at these guys when they were younger.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. Like Andy Reid did with Trey, you're saying?
Exactly.
Okay.
Because if you get them early, you know, and a lot of these issues possibly will be gone or be fettering out, you know, almost out of their system or whatever. Because it sounds like Ben may be turning the corner. I don't know if that's true or not. But it's because he doesn't sound as arrogant in his interview recently. You know, his little comments. He doesn't sound as arrogant. He seems like he's doing what they need him to do.
Right.
So not completely.
Right. No,
I could be reading into it.
No, Philip, I got you on that. Thanks for the call, man. Philip on the mobile. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Last night listening to Ben, he was very matter of fact. He was very self aware when he was saying that when he goes down low and he plays the four or the five position. He's faster than any other big man in the league because, I mean, the guy can play point guard for a reason at 6'10", because he is quick, because he's got light feet, and because he's also strong. He, when he came out last night, said that he could beat almost any big man off the dribble, and he's like, that's not a dig, that's just like I'm a guard playing down there. With my size and with my speed, yeah, I can generally beat any guy in the league. That's not a dig at them. Like, he was very self-aware about it. It wasn't in an attitude of those guys, those fat and slow centers. It was... Well, yeah, I'm a guard. With my size, yeah, I can play down there.
Mm-hmm. He didn't have to say big men either. He can beat, and I'm being serious on this, he can beat almost anybody off the dribble in the league. Point guard, two guards, whatever it may be. He's that quick and that good. He had a play yesterday along the baseline where he was, I think Dinwiddie was on him. So it certainly wasn't a big man on him. Dinwiddie was on him, and he got the ball, and he kind of acted like he was going to stand up straight, and then he just, boom, he went left-handed on the baseline, and it was over. Mm-hmm. You know, it was over that quick. I remember talking to people when he broke into the league, talking to guards that guarded him and played against him. They said, and I told you guys this before, they would tell me over again, he's not quick for a 6'10 man. He's quick for a point guard. Forget his size. He is that quick. So he doesn't have exceptional speed against big men. He has it against everyone.
Yeah.
And it's something they have to take advantage of.
Well, let's hear from Ben Simmons a little bit later last night. But this is what I wanted to get to. And right now, I do got to tell you, you're listening to 97.5, the Fanatic WP and Burlington, Philadelphia, broadcasting from the Xfinity Studio, only from Comcast. 9 o'clock hour brought to you by The Bagster. Dumpster in a bag. Get yours today at Home Depot and Lowe's. For details, go to thebagster.com. Brett Brown after the game last night. Now, I can't remember any time other than just him introducing the bell ringer. Like, we've seen that video come out 100 times.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We haven't seen a minute-long speech, more or less, to the team after a game. And Brett Brown sat down on a chair, pulled up a chair for himself, and was just sitting. And the only way I could describe this, if you haven't seen it, is him in awe of his team, where he's just like imagine he's in the locker room. He's just like, wow, the game we had was amazing. Like, he just goes into this thing where he's just in awe of everybody. So without further ado, here's Brett Brown post game, and I had to bleep something with Brett Brown.
Okay.
And he looks at Al Horford, and he says he made adult bleeping plays. You'll hear it.
Okay.
Here's Brett Brown in the locker room after the game last night.
Look at the win that we just had from a bunch of different perspectives. None more important, your desire to win, like the team commitment to winning, was as good as it's been. One. Then we had that unlikely group, you know, a bunch of different sort of people on the fish zone that came in and just played and really established a lead, and we rode that quite long. Al Horford, you was just some adult plays at the end. Really just great stuff. We had 20 deflections in the fourth period. They had 11 turnovers in the fourth period. And how about you? Like, you were great tonight, Mike Stott.
Well, yes, sir.
And our defense led the way in the fourth period, and Ben.
That's Ben Simmons as the bell ringer last night in the locker room. I've never heard Brett like that. Like, I've heard him talk about how much he loves his team and their effort and all that stuff and the period thing. Pat, you and I are on the same page. The fact that he still calls quarters periods blows my mind. But anyway, I haven't heard him like that with his team, especially looking at Al Horford and saying adult bleeping plays. Like, yeah, Uncle Al was getting after it last night in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, those are some of the behind-the-scenes stuff that fans don't get to see or hear that often. And it goes a long way to, like it or not, and I understand both ways, it goes a long way as to why Brett, you know, as we've talked about, probably is on a longer leash maybe than many people would like. And it's because of the way he deals with his players, and it's because of the admiration the players have for him, and it's because of the way he can get them to work hard constantly when, you know, it might be a time to take a day or two off. It's one of his best traits, is the way he treats people individually, and that goes a long way to upper management, and it's something that a lot of us don't get to see up close all that often.
Two things was good to see. Al Horford hadn't been playing great. Mike Scott has had a bad year.
Yeah.
I mean, I, our buddy T. Will does a podcast, and he asked me to come on it yesterday, and he was asking me about Mike Scott's slump. And I'm like, I'm done with the slumping. There's not a slump. When it's a bad year, it's a bad year. When you're talking about 40-some games into the season, oh, he's having a bad season. Last night, look, he came up with a couple of threes, came up with a couple offensive rebounds. He helped keep that momentum going for you offensively. So he was a big attribute last night. And that's one of the things you hear him talk about in that little piece, is he made sure to acknowledge that with Mike Scott as a guy that was struggling in this game. And then he also points to another guy that had some struggles recently in Al Horford, who got his in the fourth quarter. And Brett Brown made sure that he tipped his hat in that guy's direction as well last night. And Ben Simmons, we'll talk about this, for a guy that's supposed to be the best player, especially while Joel Embiid is out, little things like that of ringing a bell. I remember the Phillies had a fine jar for any time no one hustled. It was a dollar in the fine jar, right?
Right.
Like, little things like that. The Patriots, stories have come out about how Tom Brady is pissed he's never been Patriot of the Week, named by Bill Belichick. Like, it's stupid. But stuff like that helps keep guys motivated and interested when maybe in football you're only talking about a 16-game schedule, but you're still talking about 5 months, 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Basketball, you're talking about an 82-game schedule. Baseball, 162. You need to find those little ways to motivate guys to make sure they're bringing that little extra every day. Ben Simmons, rightfully so, a triple-double last night, 34 points, 12 rebounds, 12 assists, 5 steals. He looked incredible last night from start to finish. And he even helped, and Bob, I think this was the best way you put it, use the word contagious.
Yeah.
Ben Simmons made it almost contagious or his aggression was contagious with Matisse Thybulle. And he played a great game despite only having 3 points. Defensive side of things, that guy stepped up yesterday as well.
Those two were in a competition, it seemed like, to say, I'm going to get the next steal. No, I'm going to get it. And then they played off of each other really well, whereas they were looking for deflections. They were looking for each other to make that steal, to anticipate that next pass. Matisse Thybulle's defense is elite. And I don't use that. You know, I don't use great. It is NBA elite 40 some games into his career. And I don't hesitate saying that. I have rarely seen the likes of him defensively 40 games into his career.
Would you go superstar defense? He's got superstar defense?
Elite defense. He's an elite defender.
I like how whenever Bob goes top shelf, I'm like, let's just reach above it. Just one more. Let's see if we can go there.
But doesn't it mean more when you seldom use it? And when you do use it, it's like your reaction was, whoa! Okay, that's why I don't throw superstar and elite around, because when you do, then it's, oh yeah, that's another superstar, yawn. Jamie saying Dame Lillard's a superstar of NBA basketball, even though he went on 61 points last night.
This might not be the best day to say that.
Yeah,
though,
right?
Bob.
yeah, but so there's that. But yesterday was just a great day for Sixer basketball, a great day to enjoy it and revel in a little bit as to what Ben Simmons can do when he is playing away from the point guard position. And last night he got asked about this, and I want you guys to hear this. Ben Simmons, we played this a little earlier, we'll play it again. Ben Simmons, after the game, got asked about playing that five spot because Brett acknowledged it in his post-game press conference. This is the third time I can really remember Ben playing five. We've seen him go four a little bit. He went more five than he did usually, more so than usual last night. So here is Ben Simmons when asked about going down the block to play a little bit with Howell Neto starting out at the point guard.
I mean, it's tough for any big to really guard me when I'm going at him. And that's not knocking on any bigs. That's just, I'm just pretty fast when I can get to the rim. And then you got a guy like Aou who comes out, who has great touch, great basketball IQ, and he's able to find me and just make the right play and make good reads off that pick.
I know in today's day and age, Bob, on the note of top shelf and words like elite, I know the second you give a compliment to a middle-of-the-road type player like Howell Neto, the people jump in with the hot takes. Oh, all of a sudden, Howell Neto's in the Hall of Fame. No, Howell Neto does one thing really well. He distributes. He plays point guard well. Not great, not elite, not superstar, but well. Like, he's not a detriment. He's not a knock to your team. He's not a negative. He came in, he just distributed. That's what he has more of a knack for. That is why I think he is getting the minutes over Trey Burke. You have so many other guys that are scorers. You have so many other guys that want to be scorers, whether that's Ben Simmons, whether that's Tobias Harris, whether that's Josh Richardson, whether that's Al Horford. You can't afford until later in a game when maybe you need that spark, a Trey Burke coming in with a score-first mentality, distribute second. Howell Neto is like, oh, if I'm open for a three, I'll take it. But other than that, I'm looking elsewhere for guys to be scorers. He's a distributor. That's why he's getting the minutes over Trey Burke.
Yeah, and two things real quick about yesterday. One was a couple of times, one time he posted up, Neto had the ball, and he's like, no, pass over to there, then get it back, then I'm going to hold the defender off this way, and you're going to get me the ball. Boom, done, layup. Another time, Neto did a little dribble penetration, and the alley-oop was there, and he missed it at first, and then he threw it again. I don't know if you guys remember playing, and Simmons went up and like didn't, it wasn't an alley, but he like tapped it up in the air right near the basket.
Oh, yeah,
tapped
yeah.
it in.
He volleyballed
that was,
it. It was
a great play. And here's what I'm convinced of, that Neto and Mark, you're hitting on it, that Neto's getting more time now than Trey Burke. Brett Brown goes in 10-game increments, and he'll say, all right, in this 10 games, we're really going to concentrate on not turning the ball over in the hopes that every time he does a 10-game thing, then he can bring it all together for the playoffs. I'm convinced that right now they're in a 10-game increment where he's saying, let's make sure we move the basketball. Because as I brought it up yesterday, out of their last 116 baskets, last three games, 116 baskets, they have 86 assists. That is outrageous. 74% of the baskets that they've made have come off assists. And that's another reason why you have Howell Neto in there as opposed to Trey Burke.
All right. Now, Trey, have we been very positive about the Sixers for the last 12 minutes?
Yes, we have.
Has that been positive conversation?
Very positive.
Now you're going to bring it down.
I'm not going to bring it down. I'm just going to say there was one thing that was really frustrating about last night's game. Yesterday afternoon, whatever. There was a possession. Okay, really two possessions, but it was 30 seconds where the Sixers missed three threes in 30 seconds. It started off at the 8:50 mark of the fourth quarter. Sixers are up 4 points. So you figure, all right, just take control of the game. You don't need threes. Matisse Thybulle, love him, jacked up a three, missed it. You then got a turnover. The Nets came down with the ball, then turned it over. Ben Simmons got it. It was a Howell Neto steal. Ben Simmons got it. He missed a 2-point shot. Mike Scott gets the offensive rebound. He lost the ball. Goes the other way to the Nets. Then Matisse Thybulle steals it back. Furkan Korkmaz jacks a three. He misses it. Now 8:24 left on the clock, and it's still a 4-point game. Sixers able to get the ball back again after a trip down the floor real quick with the Nets. Mike Scott then shoots a three and also misses it. From the 8:50 mark to the 8:19 mark, where you're up 4 points in the fourth quarter, they missed three threes. I know a lot of people, I don't usually go to it. I know a lot of people do. The Sixers, they're a middle-of-the-road three-point shooting team, 17th in the NBA in three-point shooting percentage. They shoot the fifth fewest threes in the NBA right now. So I don't make too much of the three-point argument. But when you jack three threes in 30 seconds and you miss them in a 4-point game in the fourth quarter, that's not efficiency. That's not scoring efficiency. That's dumb basketball. They won. I can't get too upset about it, and I'm not. But all I'm saying is that's not smart. to jack up those threes when you're already... Now, I'm not saying you kill the clock, but I am saying work for a bigger, better shot, especially when you have Al Horford going finally, and you've had Ben Simmons go throughout that game.
Mm. Yeah, their three-point shooting concerns me a lot. The times that they do it, they're thinking, and yet, Brett Brown and fans of the three-point shot will argue, well, end of the game, Korkmaz hit a huge three, Horford hit a huge three, you might not win it without them.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, that's their thing.
But you also might win if you convert one of those turnovers to 2 points.
Dude, you're preaching to the choir.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm arguing you. With you, Bob. No, in all seriousness, like, you can make that argument. And, yeah, absolutely. But not only do you not need it, it's not the right play.
That's their mentality. They're
three of them in 30 seconds.
They're convinced an open three-point attempt is better than probably a made layup or dunk.
Remember Gary Matthews, Sarge Matthews with the Phillies? He would say, false hustle. That's false hustle. He'd say that. Actually, a buddy of mine, he acted like he caught a foul ball. He really picked it up off the ground and held it up.
I consider that catching a foul ball. But go ahead.
Well, Sarge even said on the broadcast, he goes, oh, that's a great catch by that fan. Uh-huh. And then they showed the replay and saw my buddy like feeling around the floor to try to get the ball, and he goes, "Oh, that's false hustle.
False hustle.
That's false hustle." The hustle there for the Sixers to force those three turnovers, as you also just heard Brett Brown say in the locker room after the game, you forced 11 turnovers in the fourth quarter. And that's how you won that game. Your defense won you that game,
mm-hmm.
and then try to get three threes in 30 seconds off turnovers. That's dumb. That's false hustle. It's not false hustle, but it's wasted hustle. I'll say that much. That's what rubbed me the wrong way. That was the only time I really looked at the game and I went, damn it, guys.
I did it too. And, you know, I got the word from home, somebody like, all right, don't start yelling at the TV again. But the only time I do when they're playing is when they do something stupid,
mm-hmm.
or when they start jacking threes.
So I mentioned earlier I was watching the game and my wife was on the sofa and she was feeding little toots, right? And she looks up and Ben Simmons just went the length of the court and put up that little hook shot, a little banking in, right? And she goes, well, that looked easy. And I'm like, yep, he can do that pretty much anytime he wants. Just want to see it a little bit more often from our guy. Now, we've talked about the backup point guard position. We talked about Ben Simmons having some success down low last night. 34 points, looked great. So then the rumor comes out, or the report comes out from YahooSports.com. Haynes comes out with the story on it, Chris Haynes, and says that the Sixers and the Lakers are two teams calling on Pistons point guard Derrick Rose. Yes, please, and thank you. Make that happen. And I know people were sending me tweets of like the trade machine and all that stuff you can do on ESPN. If this is a deal that the Sixers can pull off, and Bob, you mentioned some names that I'd be happy to part ways with. You talk about James Ennis, who has struggled this year. You talk about Zaire Smith. If that's all it takes to try to get Derrick Rose here coming off your bench at 18 points per game, score 25 minutes a game, a guy who's only started 4 games this season, by all means, bring him off the bench. 31 years old, he could still score in this league. And when you need that spark and a guy that can also distribute, you mean to tell me you're going to go from Ben Simmons to Derrick Rose coming off the bench as opposed to a Howell Neto? Yeah, I'll make that happen.
Before I saw Russell Westbrook play in the NBA, I covered Memphis when they went to the national championship and Derrick Rose was the point guard on that team. Derrick Rose was, and I also saw them play in the regional final, was, oh my God, fast. I'd never seen anybody that fast with the basketball. I'm sitting there in Chicago the day they're about to beat the Sixers. They're up like 15 points with a minute some to go. I turn to Sam Smith next to me and I go, why the hell is Derrick Rose still in the game? Boom. I didn't have the sentence out of my mouth. He went down right in front of us and tore his ACL, and his career basically was never the same after that.
Right.
But, man, he has come back from all those injuries. He is really, really explosive. I think he had like 26 or so against the Sixers earlier this year where he just puts defenders on their heels. Mm. Think of that with this team. Think of a guy that can control the ball and put defenders on their heels when you still have a Ben Simmons, when you still have a Joel Embiid, a Tobias Harris on the floor with you. My God, that would be a great addition.
Now think about the time that Ben Simmons is still on the court. You want to marvel at Howell Neto distributing the basketball to Ben Simmons to help him score 34?
Oh, yeah.
Imagine Derrick Rose on the floor.
Yeah.
You want to talk about also a guy that... I don't see Ben Simmons ever not being a point guard, facilitator, whatever you want to call it, but imagine what he could pick up from a guy like Derrick Rose.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind. It would be like a less confrontational Jimmy Butler coming here, in other words. And that's something I wouldn't mind at all. 610-632-0975. And you're thinking, Bob, Zaire Smith, James Ennis?
Yeah, Mike Scott, maybe something. Obviously, you have to match salaries or come within percentages of salaries. So, yeah, it might cost you Mike Scott and a Zaire Smith pick a name at James Ennis. Yeah. Anything short of, you know, obviously Thibault or anything like that. I don't want to part with Pell. Anything short of that, I'm good to go.
I think a pick or two.
Here you go.
All right, Chief Beef. Let's see if we get that done. Real quick, we were talking about offensive coordinator position right now for the Eagles. Somebody reminded me, this name's come out here. Tom Bomb hit me up on Twitch, is hitting us up on Twitch and saying Josh McCown for offensive coordinator. Never a coach in the league. He's your backup quarterback, obviously, last year. Coached in high school. He would go on Fridays and coach his son's team, I believe, in high school. Josh McCown for offensive coordinator.
Yeah, I don't know.
Dan Orlovsky or Josh McCown.
Okay, if neither I had to pick two.
If you had to pick or two, pick two.
I'll go McCown.
Why? By the way, I agree with you. But why?
Because he's in the game.
He's in the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's still fresh to you right now. I mean, I don't know. I still think you need to have that coaching experience. So I can see McCown coming back and being a position coach first. And then that's just totally against the... That's like a slap in the face to all the other coaches that had to go out there and work their way up. Mm. How do you take someone out of the booth there, or just someone that just hung their cleats up and say, you know what, you don't have to start at the entry level. I'm just going to put you straight at offensive coordinator.
Mm. You know, you need to learn how to coach, too. Like, people underestimate that. Oh, he knows the game. He can go in and coach. And Trey, you know this.
Yeah.
Coaching's a different animal. Like, the hours that you put in, the way you have to manage players, the things that you have to do as far as self-discipline, in that it's no longer me coaching me, it's me coaching you. You have to learn those things, how to be a leader of other men besides yourself in a coaching way. So I totally agree with Trey. It's just think somebody you can grab them and throw them into that spot. I don't want a guy learning how to coach, even though he knows the game, learning how to coach while he's coaching. I'd rather him already know how to coach and then bring him in and put him in.
The names I always go to, Ted Williams, Magic Johnson, Wayne Gretzky.
Sure.
All sub-500 coaches.
It's not easy.
Why can't you be incredible like me? Like, that's kind of how I hear them coaching. Yeah. By the way, in the alleged report, Trey, that the earth is flat.
Yes.
Jeremy is hitting us up on Twitter, constant tweeter of the show, great guy, says Netflix has a documentary called Behind the Curve, which I was thinking curveball, but I'm off. It's all about the flat earth, and it's hilariously infuriating how their cult is growing.
Yeah.
They show a bunch of failed experiments as well. So, maybe when I'm done the Aaron Hernandez docu-series, yeah, I will do
flip over to the
Behind the Curve.
Behind the Curve.
Real quick, just to put some fire on the Josh McCown for offensive coordinator bandwagon that is trucking along.
Yes.
Just like the flat earth thing.
Yes, Pat Egan?
Myers Park Football High School. The
powerhouse.
Exact.
Dominant.
12-1 under McCown. Do you want a Super Bowl? It's a simple yes or no.
Well, who did they lose to? I'll take the other guy. Whoever beat McCown, that's who I want.
It was a team that's coached by
Coy Detmer.
No, no, don't be ridiculous. He's coached by G.J. Kinney.
Ah. That's Trey's man.
Trey, man.
Trey says he's a great athlete.
Yeah, GJ was in the awesome. Whoa, wait.
I'm
GJ's
kidding,
not
guys.
In the squad.
I'm kidding. Right, I know.
I was just about that. To say, but it's like, no, it, but it's
the pride
the
of Tulsa.
Name, Egan. It's random enough to believe. Put it that way.
Oh, absolutely. No, but I think GJ Kinney's with the Eagles coaching staff.
Yeah.
Is he still in the? Yes, he is still because he was with the Giants for a minute where he played safety in like training camp.
I'm sorry, what?
G.J. Kinney went to the Giants, and they converted him to safety.
Wait, so he was a quarterback in college, played wide receiver in the NFL, and then they converted him to safety?
I believe so.
What is this, some high school situation?
Yes.
So it was the Giants.
I can't believe that he didn't stick at that.
It was the Giants before, you know, Joe Judge got there.
Oh, local okay.
Product.
All right, well.
Local product.
Makes sense.
610-632-0975, 610-632-0975. Coming up, let you hear a couple of highlights from last night's game. And also, Trey, I just want you to get back to it. Just touch on it for us for The people that did not get to hear your takes yesterday, you were off yesterday, of what made Andy Reid really resonate with so many players.
Gotcha.
It's pretty incredible, the stories you were telling, my man. 610-632-0975. We'll get to that in a few here on 97.5, The Fanatic.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
97.5, The Fanatic.
So the thing that I always look at with Andy Reid is that we have our memories here in Philadelphia, and some are good, some are bad, and I'm proud of our audience that had a positive thought about Andy Reid making it to the Super Bowl. Not, oh, screw that guy. So good for our audience. And I will consider myself amongst them with a positive thought. Oh, good for Andy is a positive thought. It's a positive thought, but don't give me a look like that.
I'm listening to you.
That was an eye roll.
I'm bringing in your wisdom. I'm drinking in the words of your love for Andy Reid. After yesterday, you said you don't give a crap. But no, it's okay.
That's good for him. I said, no. I said, I don't
he's
care.
He's a half a step above Kyle Shanahan if he wins.
He's a full step.
No, I think you're putting your foot up to go to that next step, and then you say, no, I'm good.
Well, maybe I'm the type of person that skips steps when he goes up steps, and one step is really two steps.
Now my brain's on pretzel.
By the way, I do always skip a step. Part of my what remains from my.
That's part of your exercise. That's what you do.
It's part of what remains from my OCD days. But anyway, Trey, I looked at this, and this is what really jumped out. So Brian Westbrook comes out, Donovan McNabb comes out. And a lot of your former teammates all come out and talk about how great Andy Reid is. Congrats, that's my coach and all that stuff. Jeremy Maclin is the guy that it raised my eyebrows that he was in such support of Andy Reid. In case you forget, Andy Reid signs Jeremy Maclin to the Chiefs. Jeremy Maclin plays for the Chiefs. Then Jeremy Maclin gets married, invites Andy Reid to the wedding. Andy Reid goes to the wedding. 2 weeks later, Andy Reid cuts Jeremy Maclin from the Chiefs. And even now, Jeremy Macklin's like, I love Andy Reid. I love Big Red. Congratulations to the Chiefs Kingdom and Big Red making it to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that you and your former colleagues, you and your former teammates, always will love Andy Reid?
Because he was what we needed. You know, he held us accountable. He pushed us, and you know, he got in our faces if we needed it, and you know, he never threw us under the bus. You know, he always covered us when it was outside of the facility, but he also made sure that he pushed us every day. I mean, you know, it was a tough environment to be in there. I thought that we had physical practices, and Coach Reid was what we needed as a coach. I mean, I thought that he was just like having a second father figure, someone that would just hold you accountable and push you to be better than what you were. He wasn't going to allow you to just sit there and act like everything was all good. If you weren't giving your all, he would let you know. And he also allowed us to be whatever we were. He didn't want you to change. He would always tell us, hey man, just be whatever you are. Let your personality shine. Do whatever it is that you do that makes you special, but don't get arrested. But just, you know, go have fun and let your personality shine. And that's a lot of us, we enjoyed that. Coach Reid, you know, was always, you know, when he first came in, he came in with an iron fist. You know, he had to change up the way things were. You know, we would come out to practice dressed a certain type of way, or things weren't as tight. You know, he came in and he changed all of that and made sure that, number one, how we dressed, how we appeared, making sure that everybody was on time. The weigh-ins were, it wasn't optional. It was mandatory, and you were getting fined $100 per pound until you got your weight down, you know. Coming from Big Red, even still, you know, he was like, hey, look, I know the struggle is real, but it's going to be $100 per pound until you get it down, big fella. So, you know, That's just what it was, and you could always go in there and talk to him whenever you wanted to. You know, it was, he had an open door policy if you ever had any situations. But I thought that, you know, he just did a really good job of just keeping us all together.
Let me go back for a second, because one of the things that always infuriated me as a fan, and then later a media member, whatever, was that he didn't hold anybody accountable. He'd go through the press conferences, and you're like, well, wait a minute, hold on a second. That's not what happened. Or you can't say that so-and-so ran the wrong route or so-and-so missed a block. And like, you can't, like, I'm not asking you to say, oh, you know, not that it would happen, but Trey Thomas missed a block and what the hell, you know, I'm thinking about cutting him now. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not expecting that. I'm just expecting, well, the assignment there was Trey to make the block right there and we didn't make it. So there you go.
Yeah.
Like, that's all we wanted as fans. We weren't asking for him to like call guys out in the middle of his press conference and be like, yeah, by the way, I'm cutting this guy because he sucks. Mm-hmm. Like, we weren't expecting that. But although he didn't hold people accountable to us as fans or media members, whether that be the immediately after the game in the press conference or the day after the game at the press conference, he would hold you guys accountable in the locker room.
Absolutely. You know, you would, and it didn't necessarily have to come from him. It could be coming from, because you know the coaching staff is going to sit there and talk about it. And then, you know, once your position coach comes in and shows it to you, hey, look. You know, hey, we talked about this, and look what's going on. So I thought that he just did a really good job with us and just making sure, holding us accountable and, you know, just pushing us. You know, I know it's all going to be based off of, oh, you didn't win the Super Bowl. But you know what? We turned this thing around here. I know my rookie year, we were 3-13. You know, and then Coach Reed came in, and we had some success within, what, 2 years?
Yeah, you guys were in the playoffs in 2 years.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, and yeah, you knew that it was going to be a tough physical workout. I mean, even being at all the workouts, you had to be make sure that you were there on time, doing what you're supposed to do. Our practices were going to be physical. You know, other guys would come from other teams and would be like, "Whoa, this is how you guys practice? Oh yeah, tackle all the way to the ground." You know, it's no thud, you know, and then, you know, we would run full pads until past the halfway mark of the season, you know, and it was, I thought it was just a physical style, and I thought that, you know, I think he had the right group of guys in that locker room that could handle the way he coached.
Mm. Well, again, when you were out yesterday, we put up a poll, and we asked people how they felt about Andy Reid, you know, basically what best describes their emotion with Andy Reid making it back to a Super Bowl, his second Super Bowl. And the vast majority of our voting audience said this was great. 45% said, yeah, this was great. 40% say, ah, good for Andy. Like, oh, that's a positive thought. 13% abstained, just said they didn't care. And then 1% were angry. 3,000 people voting in that poll.
Yeah.
That's 85% of people saying that they actually felt good for Andy Reid.
That's good.
And by the way, someone is saying that I am changing my opinion only because you were in studio. Well, I'm saying this right now. I'm going to screen grab this and I'm going to tweet this out to that gentleman because it shows where I voted, and my meh good for Andy is a positive, I feel a positive remark.
Meh good for Andy. Okay. That's positive line, negative is below, positive, you may be taking a step towards the positive, but the rest of your body's hanging in the negative.
I'm sorry.
It's like that throw from the line of scrimmage, Mark. You just have to have a piece of your body behind that positive.
No, you bring out the sticks and you measure. I am just on the side of positivity. 610-632-0975. Oh, and finally, Lane Johnson, Eagles tweeting it out, making it official. Lane Johnson will be going to the Pro Bowl.
Why?
Because he's an alternate, and one of the guys is playing in the Super Bowl.
He's coming off a high ankle sprain. Why is he playing in this?
So he's been named to the roster.
Okay.
Would you play?
No.
Would you tell Lane not to play?
Yes, I would tell him no.
Can you call him right now? We'll tell him on the air. Just kidding. All right, fine. Oh, just kidding, but seriously. But you look at that as a former athlete. You look at that as a consolation. Even in you, the first time you made the Pro Bowl was
alternate.
An alternate, mm-hmm. a reserve, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And you looked at it as okay. Well, this is a consolation prize.
Yeah, that was my first time making it. All right, cool. But then after that, you know, you want to be one of the three that are the top three that are selected, and also too. It's not a contract incentive as an alternate. I don't know unless he has something different in his contract, but you know, you have to be one of the three that are voted in. So really there is no other reason to go over here just to say, all right, and just to go down there. You're going down to Orlando. So there's no other reason for him to go down there other than to just say, hey, you know, to go pick up some Pro Bowl gear and
Miami.
Oh, it's in Miami, yeah.
It ain't Hawaii.
Oh, my bad, yeah. I thought, well, wait a minute.
No, but
oh,
I
no,
mean,
no, I'm like, sorry. The game itself, is the Super Bowl is in Miami, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Not the Super Bowl.
Yeah, where is the Pro Bowl?
The Pro Bowl is in Orlando.
It is?
Yeah.
No, exactly. I'm saying,
sorry.
Going to Hawaii as an alternate. All right,
yeah,
that's cool.
You know what I'm saying? I'm going to Hawaii.
Little more
incentive
than going to that
going
place
to Orlando.
Next to DeLand.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't realize the Pro Bowl was in Orlando.
Yeah, it's in Orlando. Yeah, it's in Orlando every year.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, so that's why I was like, there's no contract incentive. You're just coming off of a high ankle sprain. Why even bother with this game?
I don't know.
I get it. You know, it's, if you're named there, that's cool. Alternate. All right, cool. Congratulations. But
I'm with you.
Yeah.
When I say I'm with you, I mean I'm with you. 610-632-0975. Coming up one more time, we'll let you hear Brett Brown in the Sixers locker room yesterday afternoon after they took care of business against the Brooklyn Nets. Time of the Fanatic is 9:41.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5, The Fanatic.
Did I ever say this? I love Twitter. Have I ever said that on the air, like out loud into a microphone? Because if I haven't, I love Twitter. Now Charles is hitting me up saying, why are you being so positive on Big Red? What about all the heartache he caused us in Philadelphia? Now I'm being too positive. Now also, my good for him is too positive.
Also brought you a lot of happiness. I mean, you were in contention for 11 of the 14, whatever many years he was here. You were in contention pretty much every year. Can't overlook that.
It's a good world to be in. It's a good world to be in.
That was just because of the left tackle.
Probably.
Ladies and gentlemen, you very rarely hear Brett Brown like this, but he actually cursed in the locker room. I can't remember any time where I've ever had to bleep a Brett Brown post-game comment, but here he is in the locker room after the Sixers took care of business against the Nets yesterday in Brooklyn. He was commenting on Al Horford's game, and here's Brett post-game on how great his team played overall.
Look at the win that we just had from a bunch of different perspectives. None more important, your desire to win, like the team commitment to winning was as good as it's been won. Then we had that unlikely group, you know, a bunch of different sort of people on the fish zone that came in and just played and really established a lead, and we rode that quite long. Al Horford, you was just some adult plays at the end, really just great stuff. We had 20 deflections in the fourth period. They had 11 turnovers in the fourth period. And how about you? Like, you were great tonight, Mike Scott. Well,
yes,
really.
Sir.
Okay. And our defense led the way in the fourth period, and Ben.
There's Ben Simmons ringing the bell. He was the bell ringer yesterday in Brooklyn for the Sixers, which was great. But Al Horford, who we referenced earlier, had his struggles, certainly, and then came up with 9 points in the fourth quarter, including that three that you referenced earlier, Bob. That was a big three from him, assisted by Ben Simmons. But big rebounds in the game, forced a couple turnovers, and then in the fourth quarter turned it on to get 9 of his 14 points. That's the type of Al Horford that we can watch every game.
Yeah.
Solid defense and a guy giving you some fourth quarter points.
Two huge blocks down the end. The old man game where he got inside and a couple pump fakes, easy layups, tough layups, the big three that you referred to. It's yesterday was a really good recipe of how you're going to want to move forward, even when Joel Embiid comes back.
Mm-hmm. All right, Sam, give us a final on our Twitter poll, please.
Today we asked, would you make a trade for Derrick Rose if you were the Sixers, yes or no? We had just under 3,300 votes. 62% said yes.
I am surprised that it's only 62%. I thought we'd get like at least a 70% wanting Derrick Rose here in Philadelphia. Are people afraid that you would trade Joel Embiid for Derrick Rose? Because that's not the case.
No, 69%.
Thank you, Pat Egan. Sam Wilson, what is your takeaway of the day?
My takeaway of the day is this story of Trey crying on Mama Shaq's shoulder is the best thing I've ever heard.
That is a fine takeaway.
I wish there was video.
Pat Egan.
G.J. Kinney for offensive coordinator. Get it rolling.
That name has not been brought up. I just want to stress that. It's not, I just, in case people are listening right now.
It got brought up.
It got brought up, but not for offensive coordinator.
It got brought up by me.
You brought it up as a high school thing.
Well, now I'm moving into offensive coordinator. He's moving up the ladder. Why do you hate growth?
Pat Egan, per sources.
Apparently, you don't like it all that much either.
Bob Cooney.
Just expand on what Sam said. Lucille O'Neill, who is the mom of Shaq.
Yep.
A doctor, an author, a spokesperson, a socialite. Well, now she can add comforter to Trey Thomas to her already impressive resume.
That's awesome.
Trey Thomas.
I share too much.
No, you never share too much. In the trust tree, the circle of trust here? Yeah. Absolutely not.
All right. I don't know. I'm tired, man. I got in at 1:30
this
morning.
You did, man.
So.
You're a warrior.
You are a warrior.
So,
good man.
All right.
My takeaway of the day is that Al Horford made some adult bleeping plays yesterday. And Ben Simmons played one of his best games ever as a 76er. Let's keep it going against Toronto. Other than that, Sidney Crosby sucks. Time at the Fanatic, 9:53.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.